And we're going to take a broader look at politics now, including the auto industry bailout and the Louisiana election of the first Vietnamese American to go to the U.S. Congress. With us, we've got Sherrilyn Ifill, civil rights lawyer and law professor at the University of Maryland Law School, and Ron Christie, the CEO of Christie Strategies. He's also a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Hi, folks.
Hello.
Great to be here.
So there's a lot of news. Let's start with Blagojevich. Illinois has had its share of political corruption. We just mentioned that the former governor, George Ryan, is serving a 6.5-year sentence for corruption. Two other Illinois governors have faced legal trouble. So, Ron, do you think that there is anything about the way that politics is structured in Illinois that makes it easier or perhaps more appealing to act ethically out of line if you're a politician?
Well, I hate to generalize, and I hate to speculate about a particular state or a particular city, but the facts are pretty damning here for Rye. I mean, the current governor is under an ethical cloud. The previous governor went to prison, as you mentioned, on corruption charges. You had former Representative Dan Rostenkowski, the very powerful former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, who went to prison, who had been later pardoned by President Clinton. It just seems to me that the old-style school of politics in Chicago is one that is fast and loose with the truth and, slide me a little brown paper bag of money under the table and let's shake hands and move on. And I had hoped that with the conviction of former Governor Ryan that Chicago had turned the page, that this old-style form of politics had been finally stamped out. But the current indictments and the current situation in the Windy City have me scratching my head and many millions of Americans around the country saying, goodness gracious, what could come next?
Sherrilyn, when you look at this case, what do you see in this unexpected investigation? What do you see both in terms of its reflections on national politics and even on the complicated wranglings between parties, the complications of race, the complications of how do you talk about a case with so much innuendo respectfully to the people who may not be involved, whose names come up? You know, how do you make sense of this?
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, this is, on one hand, I would agree with Ron, and I think everyone would agree that there is something very troubling about what we've seen coming out of Illinois in the past few years. But, I don't subscribe to the, geographic propensity for corruption idea, because we'd have to then throw out, Ted Stevens in Alaska being convicted and Randy Duke Cunningham from California and William Jefferson with the indictments and the $90,000 in the freezer. I do think there is an old style of politics that really has to be rooted out. And in many ways, it's an old style of politics that Barack Obama ran against. This has got to be one of the grossest examples of it. And, and I want to be careful to say that Governor Blagojevich is innocent until proven guilty. But if you've read the transcripts of the tapes, it's pretty gross and bizarre. Particularly because, Farai, it's in many ways not unexpected. I mean, he knew that he was under investigation and had been for some time,
and
for years.
And said so as much in his own comments.
And almost dared people to say, listen to my phone conversations because everything I say is lawful. And, usually whenever politicians say that, follow me, you won't find anything. You usually find something. So, he really is on the extreme end of the spectrum. But there is a spectrum, and it's something that's got to be addressed. Ironically, what's interesting is that, Barack Obama's phone call to the state Senate leader 3 months ago, encouraging the Illinois legislature to pass, their stronger state ethics law, actually, is important here, because that may have, made Blagojevich speed up some of his other activities, because it's not just about the Senate seat. There are a lot of other things that are involved in this operation as well. So, I think Barack Obama stands well in this because he's been speaking out against it, because he did push for the passage of that ethics bill. But, it's not going to take just one man. There's got to be a real change.
Speaking of that, Ron, the Illinois Senator Dick Durbin is calling for a change in the law so that the legislature, not the governor, could replace any empty seats of the kind that Senator Obama, former Senator Obama, vacated. Do you think that's a good idea?
My first reaction, Farai, is that it's not. I would want to make sure that this isn't a usurpation of the power of the executive branch taken at the prerogative of the legislative branch. I mean, there's a reason why we have separation of powers. There's a reason that this was a power that had been specifically delegated to the governor to exercise in the event of a vacancy of a seat at the federal level that would allow the governor to appoint a new individual to that seat. I think that the right thing, as many across the country continue to echo, would be for the governor to resign, to remove himself from office, and to allow a different selection process to take place. But allowing the legislature to encroach upon the executive power is one that I think that we should be looking at very carefully, and we should not rush to judgment or to pass something very quickly that the citizens of Illinois might later come to regret.
Sherilyn, I just need a quick comment.
Yeah.
Good or bad idea?
Yeah, I think it's actually a good idea, because the mere fact that the governor is sitting at his desk this morning suggests that we're dealing with someone that we can't count on to resign or to do the right thing. And this wouldn't be the legislature. What's been called for is a special election. They're going to have a special election anyway to fill the seat that Rahm Emanuel will be leaving as a result of him becoming Barack Obama's chief of staff. So they're going to have a special election anyway. So it would be up to the voters of Illinois, not to the legislature. So
okay.
I don't see this as a usurpation of power.
Okay. On that note, we've got Sherilyn Ifill and Ron Christie. And we're going to ask you both to stay with us, because we are going to talk more politics after a break. And just ahead, also, our bloggers give us their take on the top political news, plus the business side of blogging. Can blogs survive in this economy? This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're back talking about the latest political news with Ron Christie, CEO of Christie Strategies, and Sherilyn Ifill, a civil rights lawyer and law professor at the University of Maryland Law School. So, guys, we've talked considerably about the Blagojevich case and what's going to happen in Illinois. I want to move on to something else that's going to affect people in the Midwest greatly, and that is whether or not the government is willing to play ball with the automakers. They're close. White House and Congress are close to agreeing on a deal, and what it looks like is that in exchange for a $15 billion loan, automakers are going to be required to improve fuel efficiency. They're looking at also putting aside some money for bus and rail cars for public transit. Ron, what do you think of a deal that would give more federal control over certain of the automakers in exchange for support?
I don't like it, Farai. I don't like it for two fundamental reasons. One, the federal government should not be in the business of picking winners and losers. And the immediate response to that is going to be, well, we helped AIG, we helped other financial institutions, and the reason the government, I thought, had a proper role there to intervene was to make sure that there was liquidity in the marketplace and that there was still money for people to obtain loans and for credit to continue to flow freely. In this particular case, you have an automobile industry that's been out of touch for more than a decade, with structured and leveraged contracts with the United Auto Workers that are out of touch with the American economy. And frankly, let's just take this proposed bailout at face value. $15 billion. What is that going to give you? That's going to give you a bridge loan for the next maybe 3-4 months at tops. Then what? Will these individuals from these automakers return to Washington and seek more money? I think that they need to fundamentally change the way that they operate. They need to shut down the number of franchises they have. They need to modify the existing car lines that they produce to be competitive domestically and internationally. And anything short of that, I think it's just a short stopgap measure that is going to have these same big three automakers returning to Washington for more money in the blink of an eye.
Sherilyn, there. One of the more interesting things that I've read was from futurist Seth Godin, who said, let a thousand flowers bloom, incentivize more companies existing, more car companies that can innovate, even if they're smaller, as opposed to propping up, in this case, two of the big three. But the reality is that we have two automakers desperately in trouble that employ thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans. What's the government's interest in preserving their business?
The economy not going completely in the tank, and it's fairly well in the tank already. I mean, here's the interesting thing is that with all the other bailouts, the AIG and all the others that we've looked at, we've bailed out these various financial institutions with very little opportunity for people on the ground, homeowners, to really get any direct relief. When we're still waiting on that, we see that they were able to do it in Britain, that they did a moratorium on foreclosures and so forth. And we didn't see that happen with those bailouts. Here with the automakers, we're talking about workers. We're talking about the possibility of thousands and thousands of workers being unemployed. Given the recent unemployment statistics that have come out that have shown that we are firmly in a recession and have been for some time, it doesn't seem, frankly, you know, all the economists say it's not one of those times when we can roll the dice and say, let a thousand flowers bloom. It's a nice idea, should have been a nice idea years ago when Congress should have, put CAFE standards in place that would have required the car companies to become competitive or go out of business. But now that we're in this emergency situation, this doesn't seem to be the kind of time in which the country can take the tough love that people want to dish out to the automakers. And so we're going to have to grin and bear it. But like Ron and like many others, I think many people worry that the $15 billion really isn't going to be enough. And the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, has suggested there's not going to be more money forthcoming because the car companies are not in a position to get federal government loans, you know, after this $15 billion if this doesn't do the trick. So it's a dicey proposition.
And Ron, what do you think of the proposal of having a car czar, a federal position for someone to oversee automaking?
Oh, Fry, I know you know what I think. I'm skeptical.
I have to ask you.
I don't like it. And one quick point. Look, I don't want any of these individuals to lose their jobs. None of us do. But if you look, Chapter 11 works. You look at Circuit City. Circuit City went into Chapter 11 a few months ago to restructure their organization. They're still selling television sets. If you look at United Airlines, they went into Chapter 11 a few years ago to restructure themselves. They're still flying. The big automakers can still restructure themselves. They can go into a form of bankruptcy that will allow the workers to keep their jobs, but most importantly, will allow management and labor to renegotiate their contracts and the way that they do business.
All right. This may be a very quick look at a moment in history, but there's also been a real sort of ethnic and diversity breakthrough for Congress at the expense of a seat in the Congressional Black Caucus. We're talking about William Jefferson of the Congressional Black Caucus, Democratic incumbent in Louisiana, losing his congressional seat to Ann Joseph Gow. He is someone who came to America as a child after fleeing Vietnam, and he will be the first Vietnamese American in Congress. Just quickly, is this a good moment for American politics that we see this diversity? And what does it say about the Congressional Black Caucus? Should the caucus be concerned that one of its members had been fighting so hard for this seat under these corruption allegations and lost? Cheryl,
well, which one? Well, for I, it's always great to have a first. So it's wonderful to have the first Vietnamese American congressperson. But this has got to be the most idiosyncratic race ever. You know, this is somebody who runs in a 60% Democratic district, lowest turnout perhaps ever. 14% of African-American voters turn out in the district. 28% of white voters turn out in the district. Opponent has an 18-count indictment against him. So, you know, is this a precursor of, you know, greater diversity? Some people have said, you know, this is a new day for the Republican Party. This is the new face of the Republican Party. If it is, if this is the strategy, this kind of idiosyncratic race in which no Republican member of the delegation in Louisiana offered financial support to Mr. Gow when he was running for office, this doesn't augur very well for the future.
Ron, a trend or anomaly?
Anomaly. This William Jefferson, and I worked with him when I worked on Capitol Hill, and I thought he was a very nice man, but clearly money in the freezer gives pause to return someone to Congress when they are using their office for personal gain. But I don't think this portends any great trend from an ethnicity standpoint. I'm glad that he won. I'm glad, as Sherilyn said, that he's the first. But Republicans need to gain more seats by addition, not subtraction. We need to broaden and diversify our base that will return us to power.
All right. Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot more to talk about over the coming days and weeks. Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care, y'all.
Thanks, Fry.
We were speaking with Sherilyn Ifill, civil rights lawyer and law professor at the University of Maryland Law School, and she joined us from the studios of WEAA in Baltimore, Maryland, plus Ron Christie, the CEO of Christie Strategies.